Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on KX93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
KXRN LP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX93.5.
This disclaimer is a statement notifying listening audiences that any opinions expressed on our shows are not representative of Laguna Radio Inc., its management, or its board of directors.
And welcome to the Dr. Kim Sage Show. I'm your host, Kim Sage. I'm a clinical psychologist, and this show airs live every Monday evening at 8 p.m. And we just talk about a lot of different therapy topics and psychology topics, and often have guests, other experts in the field with all kinds of passions to share. Really focusing now, especially on trauma and really what we call big and little trauma, which I'm on a mission to help people understand that so much of what we struggle with in life can actually be very related to trauma, but we often don't see it as that. We often think it's something much larger, and it can actually be an accumulation of smaller traumas. And also because, you know, what's difficult for me may not be difficult for you, so it can really vary. So we're just exploring, you know, shame and all those fun, crazy emotions. I say it tongue in cheek, but they really are important. And so tonight we're going to talk about a topic that has been, you know, I feel like is always in the news, mom shaming. Being a mom myself and just being very aware of how often we do that. I was actually reading, it was a few weeks ago, I was on Instagram and reading a post. I guess Amy Schumer just had a baby. She had decided to do stand-up. I think it was like an hour set or something, 2 weeks after delivering her baby. And the post was something like, okay, yes, I did this. And now I'm just, you know, waiting for the onslaught of mom shaming. And it was just really upsetting to me, you know, first of all, that we're still doing that. Also, to be honest, like an hour long set as a stand up, I'm sure, is a much easier gig to work after 2 weeks of giving birth than most jobs, and probably quite well paying. But even that aside, the idea that she couldn't do that, that there would be some people judging her, I continue to feel is not helping us. But it really drove me, first of all, as an advocate for moms, and to say that being a mom or a dad or a parent in general, I think, is one of the hardest jobs on the planet. And I don't think we talk enough about the day in, day out grind and the sacrifices that parents make and how truly hard it is. So I think it would be more important and more helpful if we could all rally around each other. But tonight I actually am going to talk about, it got me really kind of fired up. If we're going to talk about what bad moms are, then let's talk about what bad moms are. So I'm going to use the word bad. I'm kind of saying it in a sort of joking way, because I do also believe that parents who are struggling and broken come from their own environments and own brokenness. But when you're a child of a toxic parent, on the one hand, we can have compassion for where they came from, for the parents, you know, where they came from. But at the end of the day, it's incredibly difficult to grow up with a toxic parent. And so I'm going to talk tonight about toxic mothering and trauma. And we're just going to explore what that really looks like, why it's so impactful, what toxic parenting really is. So if you want to talk about bad moms, let's talk about bad moms. Because a bad mom is not somebody who doesn't feed their child organic, or doesn't, you know, get them off the video games enough, or doesn't vaccinate or vaccinates. All those things are debatable about whether or not you should do them, and there are arguments, I'm sure, for both. But that is not what bad parenting is about. That is not what toxic shame is about. So I'm going to break it down and talk to you about what that looks like. I'm going to play a few clips from a couple movies that I think give great examples of what I'm talking about. And we're just going to, you know, let's do it. Let's talk about what a bad mom looks like. So first of all, let me just say that, you know, none of this is meant to make people feel bad or to not have compassion, as I said, but I'm going to talk about these categories in pretty black and white terms. But remember that all of us are on a spectrum in terms of what our capacities are, how things impact us. And what I'm really talking about tonight when I say toxic mothering is most likely the kind of moms we're talking about. These are moms or mom figures who probably have most likely a diagnosis of something like borderline personality disorder or narcissistic personality disorder. Of course, they can have other difficult mental health issues, and quite certainly they most likely do, related to depression or anger or rage or anxiety. But I just want to clarify that these are the extreme. But the problem is that in real life, when we're talking about these disorders, real life often looks a little bit different, a little more nuanced. And so I'm going to try to give you some examples, but I'm sure you have plenty of your own. I spend a lot of my time in my practice seeing patients talking a lot about our parents, and not, you know, to say that it's all about parent bashing and blaming, because look, no matter where you came from, at the end of the day, you might have a million reasons to justify your pain, but you still have to find a way to redefine and heal your life in spite of the kind of parents you had or have. And so I think we're holding these two truths. On the one hand, that yes, we do know that our childhood does matter. Parenting, mothering does matter. But it also cannot be the only explanation or understanding for our difficulties. We have to also find a way to live and thrive through it. Okay, so that being said, let's talk about, first of all, why does mothering matter so much? If you ever worked with me, you know I'm a huge fan of attachment, of adult attachment. But really, this is just what we're talking about is the quality of caregiving that we have as a child and an infant, and as we mature, really does impact how we see ourselves, how we think love and security and reliability and stability and all those things, what they look like, are really rooted in our childhood. And so our mother is really our first love, right? And of course, there are other ways to have first love. There are dads who are able to become primary caregivers and parents too. And so I don't want to discard or discount that, but we're talking about the classic sort of, you know, typical scenario where even if the child has been adopted by, let's say, gay parents, it's still the same thing. The first person that really sees you or your primary caretaker is what I'm talking about. But tonight we're just focusing on moms. Okay, so our mother is our first love. She really is the introduction to life and to ourselves. And if you think about it, she is literally our lifeline. If you think about breastfeeding and needing to survive, historically speaking, if we don't attach to our mothers, we don't survive. And so we're learning to grow, and we're developing, and we're learning about ourselves and our world through our interactions with our mother. And so if she sees us, we are seen, right? If she can't see us, it's hard to know that we exist, that we matter. And so we're always, as infants, longing for our mother's physical and emotional touch and love and smiling and her protection and really her empathetic reaction and reflection of our feelings, of our wants and our needs. And that really tells us that we're seen, like I said, and that we actually matter and have value. Now, where did this come from? So, you know, most of you who listen to the show who are in the field, you know, but I'm going to just lay it out a little bit here, that John Bowlby was really the first, researcher that brought to light this idea of the importance of the mother and child relationship after he observed a pattern, really a consistent pattern, of disrupted relationships and later adult really mental health issues we call psychopathology, okay? And so what he found was that kids who were deprived of maternal care during extended periods in their lives, they tended to lack feeling and had superficial relationships and often exhibited hostile or antisocial tendencies. The attachment between mother and child is truly critical for a child's healthy social emotional development. and that mother and child are really just biologically designed to form this important bond. And Mary Ainsworth continued on with studying his attachment and really found that when mothers consistently responded to positively meeting their child's needs and also giving them some autonomy to explore, the child kind of developed this sense of security that they needed to thrive. But if that was somehow threatened by, let's say, mom's absence or her lack of sensitivity, fear activates the child to try to restore that bond. So I'm afraid I have to go try to reattach to you and figure out what's wrong. And so what they really found through more research was that fear that was not appropriately addressed, the needs weren't met, resulted in feelings of depression, anxiety, and aggression, and really long-term social emotional struggles. And the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development study of early childhood care also concluded that not only was maternal sensitivity and bonding important, maternal sensitivity and bonding is the strongest, most consistent predictor of a child's cognitive, social, and emotional development. And so all of that research, Ainsworth and Bowlby's research, really set the stage for understanding adult attachment. And what is so fascinating, I often recommend this book called Attached, but it's just so amazing to look at when you try to understand yourself, you know, why am I like this? And why does my partner trigger me? And what things make me feel safe and secure? And what things threaten the relationship? It often is very, very much related to the combination of your attachment pattern and your partner's. And often we choose partners we're seeking to heal these attachment wounds, but we often choose ones who, in the beginning, we swear up and down, don't do that. But they often actually trigger those deeper sense, that sense of loss or need or attachment issues. And so that's why couples often find themselves in these sort of situations they can't get out of. They're often just consistently wounding each other, not on purpose, but based on their attachment. So if you're interested in that, I highly recommend, like I said, a book called Attached, and Amir Levine, L-E-V-I-N-E, Amir, A-M-I-R, great book. But now we're going to talk about, because we're talking about tonight on the Dr. Kim Sage Show, about what is a toxic mother? I was saying at the top of the show that there's been so much mom shaming, as there always seems to be. And so I thought, all right, you want to talk about what a bad mom looks like? A bad mom is not someone who does stand up 2 weeks after delivering like Amy Schumer did. But a toxic mom is someone we're going to talk about tonight. And so we're going to go through the traits. And like I said earlier, these might be part of a personality disorder. They might just be little traits here and there. You might note that some of these apply to you and some don't. I'm assuming all of them won't apply to you, but they might. There are some people out there who've had some really difficult, painful childhoods and toxic mothering. But before I go into what a toxic mother really looks like, I'm going to play a clip from a great film called Postcards from the Edge with Shirley MacLaine and Meryl Streep. And it really gives you a great glimpse of toxic mothering and the impact. And so, I think it was in 1990 the film came out. But here it is, Postcards from the Edge. This is the scene where Meryl Streep is just coming in the door and her mom, Shirley MacLaine, has been waiting for her.
Do you have any idea what time it is, dear? Suppose it never occurred to you that you might have scared me by staying out so late. I was about to call all the emergency rooms.
I'm sorry, Mama. I didn't call you because I thought you might be asleep. And I came home because I didn't want to worry you.
Well, you did worry me. Look at me, I'm a wreck.
I'm sorry.
What if you had been out taking drugs or something? I'm supposed to be taking care of you now. You're my responsibility. You're my daughter. What was I supposed to think when you didn't come home?
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind if I have a drink?
Do you mind if I drop acid?
Dear, I drink socially.
I took acid socially.
No, I hardly think that my drinking can be compared with your drug taking. Even if it could be, I think that your involvement with drugs has vindicated me. I hardly think you're in a position to judge me.
Mom.
I do hope you were not out sleeping with someone.
Oh, I wasn't out sleeping.
If you were, I hope you used condoms. I didn't raise you to act this way, but if you are, I hope that it's your morals in question and not your judgment.
Ma, I'm middle-aged.
I'm middle-aged.
How many 120-year-old women do you know?
You've just gotten out of a drug clinic, so obviously you don't know what's best for you.
Oh, and I suppose you do.
Suzanne, how did we become so estranged? I've always tried to be a good mother to you, only to be met by this fresh and superior attitude of yours. You've always felt you were my intellectual superior since you were 14 years old. And rightfully so. You were always more verbal than me. Whatever. Why did you turn away from me? I just want you to like me. I just want to be your friend.
Ma, could we have this conversation in the morning? Oh. I'm very tired.
Every time I try to get close to you, you push me away. How would you like to have Joan Crawford for a mother?
Oh,
or
please.
Lana Turner?
These are the options.
I think you had it pretty good.
You or Lana or
No,
Joan?
When I had my breakdown, I would have killed myself if it hadn't been for you.
There it is. It's just like that you say, I don't know what to do with
that. I came from nothing, and I made something out of my life. You come from somewhere, and you're trying to make nothing out of yours. I think you should just get over what happened to you in your adolescence. It is time to move on.
And you were listening to a clip from Postcards from the Edge, an amazing, great film featuring Shirley MacLaine and Meryl Streep. And if you're just tuning in, I'm talking about toxic mothering and trauma. This is the Dr. Kim Sage Show. I'm a clinical psychologist, and this show airs live on KX93.5 FM every Monday evening at 8 p.m. And recently, as I was saying, as often is in the news, some mom shaming going on, and it got me really fired up. And I thought, okay, you want to talk about what moms deserve to be shamed? I mean, technically, no one deserves to be shamed. But so often people are talking about bad mothering over things that are ridiculous, like I said, like organic foods or vaccinations or, how many activities your child's in or not. And so those things are just decisions. And parenting is incredibly painful and hard at times. But I'm going to talk about toxic momming tonight in a way that really, I think is important because in my practice, I work with so many people who have come from some really difficult childhoods with moms. And it is a difficult journey to overcome and to work through. Maybe I should say to learn to live alongside. I also said before, you can't define yourself by your childhood because you can go your whole life and have a great excuse for the brokenness and wounds you have, but you won't live and thrive in spite of it. So it's this balance of understanding where you came from, but also not living in the past and living there. But tonight we're going to go there. We're going to go live in the past a bit for many people and talk about what is a toxic mother. Before the break, I was telling you why mothering is so important. We need it to survive. It helps us be seen and understand we have value. But tonight we're going to talk about toxic momming. So toxic mothering is really, a mother who will constantly or regularly display some of the characteristics I'm going to talk about tonight. And the reality is your reaction to your mom, if you have a toxic mother, will likely be feelings of sadness and anxiety or even depression in a significant way. I think the core of it really goes to worthiness. If you've had a mom like this, something you might say is, well, my mom would say she's a good mom, but I was just a bad daughter or a bad son. And so we're not trying to demonize moms. I want to say that broken moms come from their own brokenness and have great compassion for them. But right now I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about what it's like to be on the receiving end of toxic mothering. So I also don't want to make excuses for bad behavior because, as I was saying, regardless of where you've come from, you are still responsible for your own behavior and how you treat people. It's not a license to be hurtful to other people or to be selfish or destructive. It may explain your behavior, but you're still responsible for it. So, but like I said, it's important to understand that if you have had a toxic mother, or maybe you are a toxic mother, or you have one now, it has a significant impact on your life. So let's start with the first trait. And I will say this, that the bottom line is it's also that no matter what boundaries you state, this type of mom will often withhold love, will often invalidate your feelings, no matter what they are, will display these toxic traits, and they can kind of manifest in multiple ways. So the first one is, if you're talking about toxic mothering, this type of mother is often constantly critical. So it's sort of like nothing is ever good enough, even if they say they have your best interest. And it's probably true not only for you as a child or the adult child, but for the parent themselves. They're just super hypercritical. And they're constantly disapproving. They're often a perfectionist. And so it may not be in a super aggressive, overtly critical way. It just might be in a, you could have done better. What could you do differently? Constant sort of response. So of course we want to say, what could you do better and what could you do differently? But when we're talking about this kind of sort of passive aggressive criticalness, it often feels like no matter what you did, there's always room for better, right? So that's what we're talking about. And we often talk about in therapy that the inner critic we internalize, the way we often criticize ourselves, is often the internalized voice of our parents. And so this is where it might come from, right? If you're super harsh on yourself and lack self-compassion and just always focus on what you could do better, there's a very good chance you learned that from somewhere. You don't come out of the womb doing that to yourself. Trust me, you just don't. You might be wired to be more intense, but you don't tend to come out with perfectionistic qualities unless they came from somewhere. Right? So this is like I said, you never feel good enough no matter what you do. The next one is controlling. The next characteristic of toxic mothering is being controlling. And this often can go very nicely with the constantly critical behavior. But this is a person who often has very strong, overpowering type of personality. And maybe she's kind of a leader, this type of mom. But at the same time, everything has to be a certain way, or she flips out, right? So the dishes have to be a certain way in the drawer. The car has to be a certain way. The way they fold the towels, the way you deal with things. There's not a lot of room for you to do it your own way, right? So there's often this certain set of instructions on how to behave, what to wear, what to do, what's appropriate, what's not. And it's just sort of covers pretty much everything. And the parent will often tell you, well, they're the expert on all these things, and therefore they know better. And if you just do it their way, it'll all be fine. And, you know, listen, I think as parents, we're entitled to have our way of doing things. But this, remember, is more in the extreme. This is more in the controlling aspect, or they're overbearing on your life and on your social media and on your, even as an adult, right? Or on everything you do. They have an opinion about everything. There's just no room for your own sense of development. So like I said, we're not talking about controlling things in a healthy way where you're trying to, you know, mitigate fear and risk with your child. We're talking about this sort of like everything has to be their way or the highway, okay? And this kind of person, this kind of mothering person, I would say, is often you just hear their voice and it can be really paralyzing and hard to overcome this idea that the things don't have to be every, you know, specific way, that there is room for chaos in some mild order, which I'm saying chaos sort of jokingly, that a controlling person often feels that everything that's not under their control is chaos. But that's what I'm talking about. And especially if you have a parent who's more narcissistic, as a result of the control, They need to manipulate their child's feelings and needs and choices, and often take it personally if that's not done. And so it makes it really hard for a child to feel good, right? As I was saying, when if you're not doing it right, there assumes there is one right way, it implies there's something wrong with you or what you're doing. And so there's this sort of self-involvement that often comes with control, and often narcissistic mothers are very hyper-focused on this sort of need to control. And if we're talking about narcissism, you know, children are a reflection of the parent. And so if you don't look a certain way, it's a reflection upon me. Now, I mean, I think that is, there is some room there, right? As parents, we do feel that. But remember, we're talking about in the extreme degree. And these moms often want their daughters to look and be their best, but often limit them from feeling a sense of confidence and competency and capacity to move through the world on their own terms. Okay. The next one is we're talking about toxic mothering and sort of the typical traits. The toxic mothering trait number three would be guilt tripping and manipulating. And so this is a mom who actively wants to make you feel guilty or responsible for her bad behavior, especially when she can't have something her way, right? So it's your fault. She's likely to be an expert at really honing in on your emotional vulnerabilities, and she can just go right to them. She knows exactly what to say or do to get you to do what she wants. And she sort of plays with your emotions, right? And so no matter what you're trying to do, even with your best intentions, you often can become very reactive to this parent as you start to push back. But the bottom line is that she is really trying to get you to do what she wants you to do. And so guilt is often a great manipulator. You know, I do so much for you. You don't love me. You don't appreciate me. I'm never enough for you. This is what the parent is saying to you. But obviously what you're feeling is I'm never enough for you. Okay. The next one is oftentimes with toxic mothering, we find humiliation and sabotaging going on. And this can be really subtle and sort of nuanced, or it can be just direct and brutal. And so this mom, for example, might make negative comments or jokes about you in front of your family or your friends without really any regard for how her words may affect you. Often grandmothers like this, and these all apply to grandmothers too, but they will insult you as a parent in front of your kids. And it could be a passive-aggressive insult. It could be a direct insult. But remember, if this is a toxic mother, she's often a toxic grandparent. And so she's not really probably going to be changing those behaviors. And so it can often feel in front of your own kids, there's no boundary, or in front of your spouse or your someone that you want to date, or even at work, a parent or grandparent can do this to you. And then if you confront her, there's just no possibility that you're going to be acknowledged. And what they often say is, oh my gosh, you're just too sensitive. Can't you take a joke? I didn't mean that, or get over it. They don't know how to validate feelings. And so that's a big one. The next trait of toxic mothering is typically what we call sort of someone who invalidates negative emotions or disallows them. And so this is really related to oftentimes I was saying before, the humiliation or being belittled or criticized for expressing unhappiness with the way you're being treated. And so they just don't even let you have your moment of what you need to say to them. They say, you know what, you're being ridiculous, or that's not true. They don't have any room for you to acknowledge your negative feelings towards them. As I was saying, they don't know how to validate you. And you may even be criticized for even feeling bad in the first place. You're not even allowed to feel bad or have a reaction. And what happens over time is that you begin to learn, oh my gosh, I'm not going to share that stuff with her. I just have to take it because it's not going to be validated. I'm not going to be seen. And so you continue to sort of suppress your own feelings and kind of stay in that pattern oftentimes, because confrontation and sticking up for yourself doesn't work. The next trait of toxic mothering is being passive aggressive. And this is like sort of being, you know, it can often be nonverbal aggression that manifests in negative behavior. It can be jokes or comments that are meant to sort of, you know, they come out a certain way and you think, wait a minute, did you just insult me? I'm not sure. And I want to say this applies to mother-in-laws as well. And so oftentimes some of these traits, maybe you're saying, well, this doesn't feel like my mom. This is my mother-in-law. So all of these can play out, as I said, not only when you're a child, but in your adult parents and in grandparents. And so they're not going to respond well. They might become kind of pouty or, you know, shut down, or they might just like show up late for events and, you know, sort of sabotage things in that way. But it's really clear that they're not pleased with you. And so that's what that looks like. If you're just tuning in, this is the Dr. Kim Sage Show, which airs live on Monday evenings at 8 p.m. on KX 93.5. And we're talking about toxic mothering. As I've been saying, I'm having a little hard time talking tonight. It's been a very long day. That there's been a lot of typical mom shaming. And so I thought, okay, you know, the things we shame about on Instagram are often, or social media, not worthy of shame at all. But if you want to talk about what shame looks like and what toxic mothering looks like and what quote unquote a bad mom is, we're talking about that tonight. And as I said, I understand that we call what we're calling bad moms have their own wounds and deserve their own compassion. But if you're a child or an adult trying to break free of this mothering, there's not a lot of room for compassion oftentimes, because if there are no boundaries and the behaviors cannot be stopped, you can't be in a relationship with someone who's abusive to you. So make no bones about it. Toxic mothering is abusive. It really is. It's emotional abuse at a minimum. And it can often involve, obviously, physical or other types of abuse. Okay, so a toxic mother will disrespect your personal boundaries. So everybody knows we talk about boundaries all of the time. And this is a tough one, because no matter what we try to set with them as an expectation or a boundary of what we will accept or not, they do not respect them. And so if you say, hey, mom, I'd like for you to please not do blah, 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 they don't care. They're going to do it. Yeah, let's say it's a grandparent and you say, okay, we have these specific ways we'd like for you to care for our child. Could you please not feed them junk food? And, you know, listen, all grandparents want to have some spoiling. I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about a consistent pattern of just disrespecting requests or other ways of being sort of just disrespectful of the things that you want or don't want, and not really valued for those. So I think we'll take a quick break and listen to a song that I think is a really, meaningful song. It's a bit of a pop song, so I know we don't normally play this on the station, but since this is my show, I can do it, I think, for just tonight. But I want to play a song, and then we'll come back and talk more about toxic mothering and what mom shame and trauma, meaning moms who shame their kids, their adult children, because of their own toxicity, what that looks like. And we're going to get to why it's so important you get help if you grew up with a parent like that. And so we'll be right back.
I will not make the same mistakes that you did. My heart so much misery. I will not break the way you did. You fell so hard. I've learned the hard way to never let it get that far. Because of you, I never stray too far from the sidewalk. Because of you, I learn to play on the safe side so I don't get hurt.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kim Sage Show. I'm your host, Kim Sage. I'm a clinical psychologist, and this show airs live every Monday evening at 8 p.m. on KX 93.5. We are so glad you're joining us tonight. We are talking about a, you know, interesting topic. We're talking about mom trauma, really, toxic shame and trauma and mothering. As I've been saying, we often shame moms in the culture, but I really want to talk about what deserves a difficult, understanding, but complex nature of parenting and mothering. But there really are some bad moms. I'm sorry. I hate to say it that way, but it's true. And these moms, of course, have their own pain and their own wounds and their own difficulty. And I have great compassion for that. And for them, actually. But what I have to see and what I understand in my practice is that many people have had some very difficult childhoods with some very difficult mothering experiences. And of course, they're not bad people. I'm saying that sort of tongue in cheek, but I'm so tired of the shaming that I see on social media when people are truly hurting from the kinds of moms that they've had or have in their lives. And like I said, these can be your mom. It can be your childhood mom. It could be your mother-in-law, a grandparent. So we're just talking about what that really looks like tonight. So as before the break, I was talking about some of the traits of toxic mothering and what those look like. And just to quickly refresh, if you're just tuning in, some of the traits we see in toxic momming, I'm going to say it, constantly critical, and we're talking about nothing is ever good enough, control freak-ish behavior, sort of like there's only one way to do everything, and you couldn't possibly be allowed to color outside the lines in that regard, whether it's how things are done in the house, or how you dress, or what you do with your hair, or how you conduct yourself, or the way you speak, the way you use your body in some way. The next one would be sort of just in general, like I said, controlling nature, often leading to master guilt tripping and manipulating. And so there's a lot of guilt, a lot of manipulation with this type of mothering that's toxic, and a lot of humiliation and sabotaging. And as a result, if you try to express that, your emotions are not validated or allowed. We often see passive-aggressive behavior, and often toxic mothers will disrespect personal boundaries. And so no matter what you ask for, whether it's please respect this, please don't do that, or you demand it, or however you do it, it's often not allowed. You're not allowed to have boundaries with a toxic mother. The next one we see in toxic mothering is competition. And of course, this is going to be more likely between mothers and daughters, but this is really the idea that mom is sort of the queen, right? And so I often use the word queen in an empowering way, in a sort of like own your power way, but I'm talking more about the I'm better than you, I'm above everyone else queen way. And so this is often what happens, especially with narcissistic mothers who sort of see their daughters as competition. And they often will criticize their daughter, compete with them, oftentimes for even the husband's attention or love. And so it obviously can be with sons as well. But they will often, these moms will deny that they're doing that. They don't see it that way. They say, oh, I'm just trying to motivate, or, you know, be her, for her to be her best self, or him to be his best self. But they often may restrict or disparage boyfriends or girlfriends because they're not good enough, because no one is good enough, and yet still compete for attention or flirt with this person they're telling you isn't good enough for you. They need to be in control and be number one in their daughter's or son's life. And they may invade their child's privacy or undermine their relationships with their friends. So this kind of mom is usually judging your friends all of the time, and no one's ever good enough. Even if you have good friends, she's always talking about something negative about them, or maybe she's trying to, you know, run faster than you and compete against you physically. I would say in Orange County, especially in our very outside-driven culture, you often find moms who say, oh, you know, I'm trying to be just like my daughter. There's this sense of just we're equals, as opposed to the sort of a bit of a hierarchy and dynamic of mother and daughter. I always say, you know, it's okay for your daughter to think you're her best friend, but, and I'm probably going to get a lot of heat on this one, but I just don't think it's healthy for your child to be your best friend. I think being friends with your mom is a great thing. I think I love the friendship between mothers and daughters, and I'm a huge advocate about that. But of course, when you're raising kids, there has to be some boundary there. But I just don't think it's healthy when you're saying that your child is your best friend. Like, I see posts all the time saying, I just gave birth to my best friend. And I want to respect that there's probably different meanings to that. But I think it's important that you understand that when you tell your child that you're their best friend, that's a lot of pressure for them. That's a lot of pressure to be your confidant and your support system. And if you're doing that, it may not allow room for you to be your child's best friend. And of course, we want our kids to have other friends besides us too. But when I say that, I'm just saying that, you know, it's good to be there for your child and or your growing young adult human, but it's just a lot of pressure. You don't want to be turning to your child or your teen to solve your problems, to complain about your marriage, to trash your husband or wife. It's just not healthy. It creates a huge burden for kids, and they love you and they want to be there for you and they want you to be happy. But so they're sort of trapped. So it's really important to be mindful of that and competition and being a best friend and a confidant. Now, like I said, it's not always toxic. I do think there you can have friendship back and forth, especially as you get older. You can engage in those ways. But once again, you have to have some boundaries around that, especially if one or both of you are asking for them. So you can set that up any way you want. And it's never, I would say this is not black or white. Being friends, of course, like I said before, it's super important. But just be mindful of how and what that looks like. Because we want to have reciprocity. We want to have boundaries. We want to have respect for feelings, just like you would hopefully in a healthy friendship. And we don't want to have so much emotional intensity and intimacy that it feels like a burden, because, you know, the toxic mother may betray your confidence or manipulate you when she can't get what she wants from you if you allow her in that friend role. And of course, this is going to play out over time. You're going to begin to know this and see these patterns. But that's really important, okay? So as people often say, you know, she can be your best friend, but you can't be hers, if that makes sense. Narcissistic abuse is often a part of toxic mothering. And this is really repeated shaming and trying to undermine and affect the developing identity of your young girl or male child. And what it does is really create insecurity and low self-esteem. And so when you put all these qualities together, these sort of traits of toxic mothering, they make it often feel for a child and a young girl and woman that she can't trust her own feelings and impulses and that everything is her fault. Because look, if your mom is never happy with you or you're never good enough, it's really hard to be good enough and satisfied with yourself. Obviously, there are varying degrees on a spectrum of emotional, physical abuse, neglect, toxicity in terms of mothering. You may have, you know, okay, your mom may have a few of these little sprays here and there. But, you know, I would encourage you to look at any of these. If any of these things I've talked about you can relate to, especially more than a couple, it's definitely worth considering examining, wow, I wonder how that's affected the way I see myself. I wonder how that's affected the way I show up in relationships or what I expect from my own children. Oftentimes, if we're not mindful, we can turn around and repeat those same patterns, or we can go so far to the opposite extreme that we're also not in a good place. And so what we want to do is obviously teach our daughters, I believe, to learn how to protect themselves and stand up for themselves. We don't want them to feel defenseless and that they don't have a voice. And there's a tough line to walk in this because obviously, you know, I always say I want my daughter to know how to push back, but at the same time, I can't let her push back all the time. And so it's a fine line. I think that back in the day when, you know, children were seen and not heard, and especially girls, and girl culture is still this way, you know, just look pretty and be nice. Women are pushing back, thank goodness. But it's really an unhealthy way to grow up. And so we want to let our voices be heard and be honored and respected. And if you're never given a chance to do that, if you never give your child a chance to have a voice, how in the world are they going to know how to do that out in the universe? So, you know, I always say parenting to me, it's the hardest part is knowing when to push and when to back off. So this is an individualized thing for you to figure out. But it's really important because the bottom line is that having a toxic mother is so impactful to your sense of self. And basically you have to either sacrifice yourself and lose your mother's love, right? Or really just mold yourself around and let yourself be a victim to that constant behavior to survive that relationship. And when you're a kid, you have no choice. You have no power. You know, things are done to you by adults that you have to learn to find some way to survive. And so over time, if that's happening over and over again, it's really difficult to develop a sense of self, to feel worthy, to feel that you matter, and that your emotions are powerful and meaningful, to have permission to even be angry, right? If you have a toxic mother who, let's say, was a rageaholic and super ragey, you might find that you're afraid of conflict because there was no room for you. Anger and rage was dangerous. And so you don't know how to be angry. You don't even think that you get angry, or you've learned to just repress all of that. And so it's learning how to connect with all of the feelings that you have. Because the core is often that I'm bad. I'm defective. I'm broken. There's something wrong with me. You know, if your parent, your loving, meant to be loving mother is critical and telling you you're not good enough and using abusive language or invalidating or not respecting your boundaries, there is just no way you're going to be able to develop a very strong sense of core and of yourself. And so all of that really can feel like abandonment in some way or abuse. And it can create a lot of anxiety in relationships. It can make you avoidant in relationships because love is dangerous. Love is not safe. And if your own mother can hurt you, then really anyone can hurt you. And people often, you know, stumble into therapy as a result of broken relationships, trying to understand their patterns. And, you know, this keeps happening, or I can't seem to make progress in this area of my life, or I just never let anybody in. No one's ever good enough for me. So oftentimes these are the things people come in with that we start to unpack and unravel, and we start to realize, oh, I see where this perfectionism came from, or I see where your avoidance comes from, or your own criticalness. And so it becomes very difficult to have any sort of self-compassion when you've grown up like this. We're almost finished, and I'm just going to play one quick clip from this film, The Joy Luck Club, which is a phenomenal film about the nature of mother and daughter relationships. And then we'll wrap up the show. Here it is.
You're mad at Waverly? How could I be mad at someone with all that style? It's just a shame that I wasn't born that way.
So it's me you're mad at?
No. I'm just sorry that you got stuck with such a loser. That I've always been so disappointing.
What do you mean disappoint? Piano?
Everything. My grades, my job, not getting married. Everything you expected of me.
Not expect anything. Never expect. Only hope. Only hoping best for you. There's no wrong to hope.
No? Well, it hurts. Because every time you hope for something I couldn't deliver, it hurt. It hurt me, Mommy. And no matter what you hope for, I'll never be more than what I am. And you never see that, what I really am.
June, since your baby time, I wear this next to my heart. Now you wear next to yours. It will help you know. I see you. I see you. That bad crab, only you try to take it. Everybody else want best quality. You're thinking different. Waverly took best quality crab. You took worst. Because you have best quality heart. One can teach. Must be born this way. I see you.
And that was a clip from The Joy Luck Club, which is an amazing book by Amy Tan and an amazing film about mother and daughter relationships. And I would say there's some degrees of toxicity, but the film, I would say those are not mothers meaning to really truly hurt their daughters. And I think no mother probably is, to be fair, too. But that's the sad part, is often these types of mothers have really no idea that they're hurting their children the way they are because of their own struggles. And so I do say that part with compassion. I say all of it with compassion for really both sides. When you hurt people, you hurt people, right? So what is that expression? Hurt people, hurt people. It's just really true. So if you've been listening tonight and you notice that you have feelings of being a people pleaser, or you walk on eggshells, or you don't feel good enough, you are harsh on yourself and you talk hardly about what you really feel, but deep inside you never feel good enough, or you think you're too sensitive, I would highly encourage you to do some work on exploring more about how your mothering may have affected sort of the way you see yourself. And then maybe doing some work, looking for a therapist, or reading some books, or listening to podcasts on toxic shame and mothering. A great book is Will I Ever Be Good Enough? Healing the Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers by Carol McBride. And then Understanding the Borderline Mother, Helping Her Children Transcend the Intense, Unpredictable, and Volatile Relationship. And that's by Christine Ann Lawson. There are a lot of great books about toxic parenting, but I do want to say that it is really important for all the relationships you will have in your life, whether it's yours as a friend or a lover or a parent or a student, whatever it is, how you see yourself matters. And as I just played the clip, she said, the mom said, I see you. And that's what we want. We want to feel seen by our mothers and by our fathers. We want to be seen by our partners. We want to be loved for who we are. And if you did not get that in your childhood, there's a really good chance that you're struggling to get it now. So on that note, you've been listening to the Dr. Kim Sage Show, a show tonight that explored toxic mothering, because as I've been saying all night, I'm so over the mom shaming. If you want to talk about what really affects people in terms of being a good or not so good mom, it's not Amy Schumer doing stand-up 2 weeks after giving birth. It's a pattern of toxicity and hurtfulness that affects us our entire lives. But the hope is that you can do work, you can set boundaries, and you can change your life and change your relationships. Yes, you'll have to learn to live on alongside this type of parenting and childhood, but you truly can find your way out of it and into healthy relationships with yourself and those you love. So thanks again for listening to the Dr. Kim Sage Show. As I said, I air live on Monday evenings at 8 p.m. on KX 93.5. And I wish everyone a beautiful evening, and take good care.